Hello, I'm Leo Brown. This is the What If It Is True podcast. And this week, Father Thomas Loya and I talk about the birth control choices of 20-something-year-old girls, how to be truly respectful, and what it really means to have a proposition and not an imposition. All of that and more. I'm Leo Brown. This is the What If It Is True podcast. And this is Breadbox Media. Hello and welcome. I'm Leo Brown. This is the What If It Is True podcast, and Father Thomas Loya with us. Father, welcome.
Thank you, Leo. Great to be here.
I want to take some time. You know, it's been a few years. We've had regular conversations, generally about once a week on the, first it was the live radio program, then it became the streamed radio program, and now we're in this podcast world. But I think it's important to kind of talk about, because I think we share a philosophy when it comes to approach, especially a Catholic approach, and I would even say evangelization approach, that is, in my world, in my experience, pretty darn different than anything I've experienced,
yes.
Right? Because, we want to have, and I think that this is going to be the hallmark of these conversations, and when we step into having conversations with others, we just want to have conversations. We just want to have dialogue. We want to have engagement, and respectful engagement that says, I value you. I value you as a person and what you're bringing to this discussion. I'm not necessarily here to change you, but just to understand you. Is that fair?
Yeah, absolutely. I call it kind of reminds me of the Zacchaeus encounter. Remember when Christ saw Zacchaeus up on the tree?
Mm-hmm.
And he said, come on down. I want to have dinner with you tonight. Everybody was scandalized because this was a hated person. You know, a tax collector was like the lowest of the low. And Christ just looks up and says, hey, I want to have dinner with you tonight. So, and what did that mean? You know, he didn't wag his finger at him. Just say, come down here because, you scoundrel, you're cheating my people. He says, I want to have dinner with you tonight. And so there was, he looked for a meaning point. Same thing with the woman, who's judging you, who's condemning you? No one. Okay. Neither do I, but don't go now, but don't sin anymore. I think this would be certainly my message, my approach. The Bible kind of gives us a guide, a blueprint that we want to bring what we believe is good. We want to try to bring that to people, not because we're trying to, be the holier than thou or condemning, standing in judgment, but we want to share our joy and we want them to have that joy, And so we're offering that, but we're not preaching to them. We're not forcing on them, not wagging our finger. We're offering this joy. We're sharing this joy with them. And we want to do that, but we also want to know how can we do that because, where is it that they're coming from? Like, what is their where are they coming from, and where can we maybe offer something that might be a better way? Like we want their good. It's all about them. We want their good, and we think we do believe. We have something good. Like Pope Francis like his favorite word is joy. We got something we're joyful about, and joyful is different than happy. Joyful is something much richer than happy. And joy by its nature wants to be shared. We want to share that. We want to share, especially with people who we think maybe are further removed from it, that haven't heard about this joy, And but the starting point is some kind of encounter, some kind of conversation. The hey, let's have dinner tonight kind of thing.
Yeah. Well, the thing that I've often heard, and I know you know this well, is that there's the adage, if you will, that Catholicism is a proposition, not an imposition, right?
Yes.
But I think you would agree that frequently we hear much more imposition than proposition.
Yeah.
And, what I want to be able to do is exactly this concept of proposing questions. And with literally and honestly all due respect, I don't care where someone is in their life. I don't care where someone is in their quote-unquote sin. That is a them and God ultimate situation. What I want to do is say, well, it's interesting you think that. Is this something you could consider? You know, we talked about this. I think it's worth sharing. We talked about this before we started the recording. You know, I'm in startup. I think it's, you know, I'm as transparent as the day is long and everything. Father, I have spent every dime I've got to my name launching this company. It's been 18 long months. It's been, a team of investors that's helped keep this thing afloat. I've cashed in every investment account. I've depleted all of my savings. I have mortgaged my home. I have there was a time I had a credit rating of, I don't know, it was like 800. I mean, my goodness, I was in the same job for 13 years. I made great money. I was the poster child for give this guy a credit card. And I got him. I got a bunch early on a year or so ago. And I've kept this company afloat with this, and we were spending ridiculous amounts of money every month. We finally just shifted gears and said, you know what, we're going to abandon the streaming. We're going to go for this podcast. Now we're going to be cash flowing very quickly. It's exciting. But in this time of me being cash poor, I went back to waiting tables as a 48-year-old man in a restaurant with 20-something kids. But I love the environment. I got to tell you, I love the restaurant. The food is great. It's an overused term, farm to table, but it's they've got an Argentinian grill. It's the only one in Lexington, Kentucky. It's an amazing just product that's turned out of this place every single night. It's unreal. And it's a pricey place, right? So the tips are good, right? You know, I'm making 20% plus consistently. And so the money's good. Well, I'm there the other night, and, you know, as restaurant conversation goes, there I find myself with two 20-something women talking about birth control, of all things. They're talking. I'm there. We just happen to all be in this, you know, it's a lull that happens often in restaurants where you're just waiting for tables to show, and then you get weeded and everything gets crazy, you know, you get out of control. Well, we're in this lull time. We're all hanging out. And one of them's talking about, I don't know where it starts, but she's got like an implant, right? She's got this kind of thing that's always there. And then somebody's like, oh, I thought about doing that, but I decided to do this instead, but I'm not so sure. And then they turn to me because, I mean, they know why I'm there. I tell them, well, I got a Catholic media company and it's in startup. So they know my story to some degree. And they say, Leo, you're Catholic. Do you even believe in birth control? And the door swung wide open, right? It just swung as off the hinges wide as it possibly could. And I didn't say, no, I don't believe in birth control, and you shouldn't either, young lady. I can't believe, you know,
right.
Or how dare you even be having premarital sex? I mean, because I was in my 20s once. I know that lifestyle. That's how I know how to wait tables, because it was in that world, you know, 25 years ago. So I said to them, I just said, well, you know what? What if there was a different way? Like, I didn't say, no, as Catholics, we don't believe, you know. I just said, what if there was a different way that could actually be maybe even more effective than what you guys are doing? It's certainly safer than something like a surgical implant or something that's inserted into you that could go bad. I mean, what if there was, and they're like, oh, what are you talking about? The rhythm method? Like, as you know, everybody knows they want to chastise that Catholic birth control method that ends up with 12 kids in a family. And I said, actually, no, I'm talking about the Billings. It's a method, but it's a Billings method. And it has to do with vaginal mucus that's going to change depending on your fertility. You can really get a handle on just how fertile you might be. And you just have to avoid sex for a day or so. I mean, it's super simple. And of course, the vaginal mucus became the joke for the night. But, you know, it was... I know that no one's ever said that to them, and I know they've never had a 48-year-old Catholic man married talking to them about their vaginal mucus, but at the same time, I didn't judge them. They're still my friends, right?
Right.
They're not avoiding me like, oh, stay away from weirdo over there. You know, it became, because I just presented it in a very matter-of-fact way. And I mean, they were getting graphic with the stuff they were talking about, and me saying vaginal mucus with them, you know, that's no big deal. But then it became the joke. But at the same time, that I'm still in their circle. They're still going to have the conversations with me. They're still going to, you know, and I'm going to talk to them, and we're going to be respectful. And there was not a moment of judgment for me, they didn't sense that because I didn't offer that to them. I just said, well, but and not that they're going to, I don't know, maybe they did. Maybe they went home and Googled up Billings method. What's this guy? It's a vaginal mucus. Yeah. What's it? Who knows? Who knows?
Right.
I don't know. But it's not my place to know. All I did was propose. I didn't impose.
Right.
So I want to live that, Father. I want to live that. Let's have a proposition and not an imposition, because unfortunately, generally, it is an imposition.
Yes, it is. And you know, to be clear, of course, you wouldn't, you know that they shouldn't be having premarital sex. They shouldn't be. Okay,
I know they shouldn't.
Right.
Yeah, but
you know,
I mean, but I didn't just wag my finger at them and
exactly.
say you shouldn't be doing that, young lady. All I did was say, what if there was something different? What if there's something better than what you're doing?
Right. Because
right?
See, in that what you did, Leo, and then what we have to do really is, you're making it about them. You're plugging in. You're showing that you're sending a message that I have a regard for you. Hey, I got a better way. Something you might like. Something might be better for you. And then what happens is you open a door for them. Like you said, who knows what they did after that? But you open a door. If they like that door that you open, they step through it. They're going to want to step through the next door and the next door.
Sure.
And then pretty soon you've got your, you know, full blown practicing Catholic, whatever. You know, again, and your intention
exactly.
is that. Yeah, we like Jesus said, you know, he hoped all would be saved and come to the truth. Because yes, we want all people to come to the truth, because we know the truth is makes us it's happy. It brings us joy, it brings us that contentment, something like that. But our intention isn't to convert them on the spot. It's to simply propose, open a door, because there's, you know, many, many successive doors after that you hope they'll walk through, and find this way. That we're proposing that we're there. You know, we have been blessed to know this way, and we want others to know this way, but they have to walk through those doors that we simply open. And again, I have to refer to Christ. The only time he did a lot of finger wagging was to the Pharisees, you know?
Yeah.
You know, to the people,
exactly.
You know, the blind person or the people. You notice he always would ask him a question or kind of like a, engage them in this way, like he would propose to them and so on. And most people are not, you know, the Pharisees. Most people are like the people that Christ encountered and cured and so on and healed. And so we're really adopting that same technique as Christ. You know, it's that, let me show you something. Let me tell you about a better way. Let me tell you about something. Let me ask you to invite you to think about something. And it's all about them. You know, you make it about them. Not because you're plugging into a selfishness, although there is something to be said about that, because we're dealing with, you know, let's face it, in our day and age, we're dealing with a lot of self-centeredness and narcissism, that kind of thing.
Yeah.
And okay, so we have to use that. You know, we have to plug into that. But that's not our main intent. It's not just to enable narcissism, but it's to send a message that we're making it about you, about how you can be happier, you know, and we're inviting you to, we're just proposing something that if you bite on it, you know, you might find yourself happier, and we can keep talking about it and keep chewing on it, you know, and taking that next step.
Well, Father, one of these young ladies, because we had talked more prior to this conversation, because religion always gets talked about in restaurants, in among wait staff, it always happens.
Yeah.
And she was raised apparently in a very strict kind of fundamentalist Jehovah's Witness background, but it was such that, you know, she's got such a disdain for anything.
Yeah.
And, you know, I can't remember where I went in one conversation. But I could tell I ladled it on a little bit too heavily. And, it was still my form of proposition, but it kind of got too deeply philosophical.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, because she had kind of gone there, I thought that maybe she was capable of having that conversation. And I could tell that I was probably pushing some boundaries with where, and she shut down pretty quickly, and I could see it. But so, you know, this time when this door opened, I was ready, right? I'm like, I'm not going to go.
Yeah.
I'm not going to go too far. And I think that, you know, that is such that nuance of approach. You know, I've been trained, Father, on through, you know, so many different programs of human interaction and sales and business, and whether that's Dale Carnegie or Tony Robbins programs or Dave Ramsey. But the one thing, the one common denominator in all of that is that you pay attention to the other individual, right?
Right.
It's not you're here just to razzle dazzle and song and dance, and because you've got something that's mm-hmm. so fascinating that somebody's going to buy it. It's no, you really listen and you key into what it is that they need, and then when you find it, you solve it, right?
Right.
When you find the point of pain, this is the classic, and this is true of the Dale Carnegie Sales Advantage course. It's all about digging deep enough to find the point of pain, at which point you have a solution.
Yeah.
And, you know, if we take this, if we were willing as Catholics or willing as people of faith to really take that approach and try to give someone the opportunity to reveal their pain to us,
mm-hmm.
right? As opposed to simply assuming that we know that we have a solution,
right?
Which we do, we know we do, but they're not ready to hear that,
right?
Because we haven't taken the time to understand what is that particular point of pain for that individual that we then might be able to propose at that point, not impose, still not saying, well, here's why you fix that. I've got an aside, I got to tell this story because it's funny. I've managed numerous sales teams over the years, and I had one guy, his favorite line was, well, I could tell you how to fix that. That was his line. I could tell you how to fix that. And I was like, I don't know that that's really going to end well. And I would get complaint calls, Father. I would get clients like, can you get this guy out of my business? All he's been doing is, and I finally had to fire him. And because that was his approach. But Father, you know this. You know that people look at us at times, assuming that we're just waiting. We're
right.
just waiting for that. Well, I can tell you how to fix that.
Right.
Or, you know, without listening, without engaging, without understanding, all we want to do is just give them a cookie cutter solution. Here it is. This is how you fix it, and it's all good, rather than even giving them the time to understand what they're dealing with and where their points of pain are. So, you know, that to me, I mean, that has to be a hallmark for what we do.
Yeah, and it reminds me of John Paul II's that, you know, the personalistic norm. In other words, he uses that, the norm for everything. This is a person. You're in the presence of a person. Now that
right.
gives you a whole world of how you are then to be present to that person. You know, that person is who it's and what it's all about. And
unique,
yeah,
completely unique,
unique
and different. Every approach is different.
And, you know, Leo, I'm a trained counselor and do a lot of it as a priest, you know, pastoral counseling. And,
mm-hmm.
And the one thing about people, we talk about their pain, it's very difficult to make progress with someone unless that person believes that their pain is being heard, is being validated, you know, that they're being validated mm-hmm. of what they feel, what their pain is. If they believe that the other person, whoever that is, whether it's like a spouse who's a couple is having difficulties because, and the one is not, it just does not feel that the other one is understanding or sort of validating their feelings, their pain. And then also the counselor. Okay. Once they feel that, once they have that sense, that's when you can make the most progress with them. And it's a similar kind of thing here. It's about kind of getting into, in fact, in the, one of the techniques that has a lot of success is this retrovi, you know, that they use for couples. And one of the things they do in there, they call it like leaning into the person. You know, you kind of lean into them to really walk around in them. And the key word is dialogue. Like we have to dialogue, not try to be right or try to, impose.
But fix. Fix.
Yeah, fix.
Not
yeah,
to
exactly.
Fix.
We're not going to fix anything. We're not going to. We're just going to hear you out. We're going to validate where you're coming from, and we're going to respect that and take that seriously, and it's only from there that we can move forward into, you know, the remedy, the healing, and it's the approach that I've taken. In many cases, I don't know, over the years, Leo, I kind of didn't know that I was doing it or that but I was now realizing, like Pope Francis, he kind of added I think he brought a term to it, you know, company, encounter, you know, witness.
Mm-hmm.
But I kind of was always naturally that way. And I'll tell you, when I was a kid, you know, many things can inspire you along the way of your faith, your vocation. I remember as a kid watching a movie, Gregory Peck starred, he was a priest called Keys of the Kingdom. It's kind of a classic old mm-hmm. you know, black and white movie.
Yeah.
But I remember being profoundly touched by that movie because little did I know, it was almost like prophetic for me of things to come. Little did I know, what was really touching, one of the things that touched me in that story was the relationship of the priest to his a really good friend who was an atheist. Mm. And he remained an atheist even on his deathbed. And he apologized for that. You know, he told his friend, the priest, you know, they were the best of friends, but he just couldn't believe. And he apologized. And but the priest never condemned, never wagged his finger. Never. He loved him to the end. Even to the end, the guy still couldn't believe. He apologized for it. But the priest was present to him. And I remember being generally touched by that example.
Yeah.
You know, you're kind of wondering, like, well, when's the priest going to finally tell him, you got to convert, you got to believe, you know? But he didn't. He just knew where this guy was coming from and respected that and did what he could for him and walked with him to literally his last breath. And I think that's kind of like what we're talking about here and the way we have to approach people. If we want to offer them another choice, another option, another way of looking at something, which we know works, you know, it's the truth. And we want that joy to be shared. You know, we want them to come into that, but they won't unless they feel that they're being validated as a person.
And they won't unless they feel like, again, it is truly a proposal. You talked about St. John Paul II, the personalistic norm. You're talking about Pope Francis and really what he's taken. I mean, if anything, he's taken that personalistic norm to the nth degree,
right,
especially in something like Amoris Laetitia, which has gotten all the crazy response. Because, you know, when you start talking about internal forum, there's nothing more personalistic than that,
right?
When you're talking about we are so focused on this individual couple and the struggles and the challenges, you know, these are not serial adulterers. These are people who are sincere in their approach of relationship and sincere in their approach of faith. And, you know, that's where healing, kind of what you're talking about in this counseling, I mean, that's where the healing can begin, because now we're talking about, we understand where you're coming from.
Right.
We understand the pain you're dealing with. We understand the challenges that you're facing. And we want to help you find a solution. Not that I can tell you how to fix that, right? We're not taking that approach. We want to help you find a way to solve this. And, you know, there's nothing greater. And believe me, I know, you know, as I was explaining a moment ago, my startup phase of this company and the challenges that I faced, but it's true. And you know, like I say, I'm a huge amount of my career has been in sales because media is hinged upon the sponsorship.
Mm-hmm.
There's nothing that's more rewarding when I hear someone agree with me to say that, wow, this really could be a solution, or this could be something I want to be a part of, or this could be something that, you know, that when I have that fulfillment, when I have that affirmation that someone is like, they see my vision, right? They get it. They're like, oh, wow, this really is something. You know, there's an amazing degree of satisfaction that comes from that. And it's the same trigger that we're talking about here, Father. It's just someone hearing, wow, you know what? You at least hear me and get me in ways that no one else has been willing to do. And it's hard because there are times, there are times you want to say, you're like the Gregory Peck example, there had to be times, if that was a real situation, where the priest is thinking, this is a collision course, or it potentially could be, and there's a natural kind of selfish desire that we have for the individual. But to really affirm someone where they are and know that it's not right, but we have something that could potentially be right, you know, that's a maturity. I think it just takes a degree of maturity even to say, no, we're going to take this slow. We're going to just take this as at the pace it needs to take, and at the same time affirm all of this. It's not the norm. Let's put it this way. It's not what most people experience when they deal with Catholics or when they deal with people of faith, or when they have conversations. It usually at some point comes back around to some sort of judgmental shouting and, disagreement. Yeah, and honestly, I can't wait to have those conversations with people. I can't wait to have the conversations with the atheists or with the Wiccans or with the practicing homosexuals or with the sex workers or, you know, and people who think they really love their lifestyle and whatever they love about it. And we can have those kind of conversations and still find a way to affirm them, even with the places where we most disagree.
Yeah.
I mean, that's exciting to me. It's exciting, right?
Well, yeah, it is. It is. And I think that's really what, again, I think Christ modeled that. And I think that's what the new evangelization is about. It's about what being human is about, you know, and being human is actually exciting when you're authentically, you're genuinely human. I had several experiences, Leo, over the years where I was beginning to have that encounter, but then, you know, well-intentioned people and literally intercepted that and whisked me away, literally whisked me away. There were times that I was actually whisked away from something when just when I was getting that encounter, you know, one example was that it was at a convention, a conference. I was giving a talk and, this particular conference, and there was even a mass before that, and the Rainbow Coalition showed up to protest. They showed up at the mass, you know, and they wore their sashes and all that.
Mm-hmm.
They came up for communion. They didn't go, but they were restrained. They were making a demonstration at church, but they were restrained. So they didn't like, it was like a violent kind of thing, but they were making their point, which, you know, of course they shouldn't have, you've been using the mass for that. Okay. But then afterwards at the conference, they trooped over to the conference where I was speaking, and they were there, and some of them would interrupt, and they would start to, you know, presenting their cases like that. And at the end, when it was over, I remember coming down off the stage, like we were speakers, we were like a panel, and they kind of came up to me, and they were, and when they came up to me, Leo, they were coming up to me to really engage me. I could feel they came with their pain. They were like challenging me, but it was with their pain. And I turned to them and I started to engage. And I thought, oh, this is the moment I want, you know. And I just got, you know, I just latched onto it. I said, man, this is the moment I want. And what happened?
That's why you're here, right?
Yeah, why you're here. I mean, I could tell the person is coming to me. They were coming with that, like they challenged me, but they also wanted an answer. They were speaking out of their pain, but they came to me, and I wanted that. And I said, wow, that's the golden moment I want. And just as we started, what happens? I literally was whisked away by security guards and ushered out the back door of the conference center.
You're not safe here, Father. You're not safe with those guys.
I know, and I'm like, I want to talk. No, Father, you'll be okay. Okay, well, they thought I was in trouble, you know, like they were saving me, you know. I'm like trying to almost like resisting arrest, almost, you know. I said, no, I want to be with them. No, Father, it's okay. What's okay with them? They thought I was afraid of them. No, I was afraid of the security guys. I was telling them, no, I want to be with them. I want to talk to them. But I've had I've had an encounter more than once, you know, and it's like, it shows, like you're saying, Leo, we've got a long way to go. And what seems to be natural for you and I, and we're not patting ourselves on the back, I'm just saying, what seems to be natural is still very foreign in terms of the norm, you know?
Mm. Well, and as well, we know there's so much division and there's so much that divides us. And there's those who simply look for those opportunities, whatever they may be, whether it's country of origin, whether it's ethnicity or religious affiliation or lifestyle choices. You know, there are so many things that we want to set up these barriers and these false walls that say that we simply can't cross this and we can't get beyond this. And, you know, I think if we can really have, if we can be known for the respect that we have, even in disagreement, right? I think that there's something so important about respectfully disagreeing. And what I found, and I'm, this has kind of been my experience, and I do a lot of talk radio, even outside of the stuff that I produce, and I sit in on big news talk shows and have these interesting engagements. I had a guy, my goodness, it was a couple of, maybe a couple of months back, I was filling in for the big news talk station. A guy called a second day in a row, and he said, Leo, I've listened to this radio station for years, probably a dozen, He said, I've called this radio station twice. Once was yesterday when you were filling in, and today. And this guy, he began with the whole, like, you're not, because I mean, I get into some very interesting territory, and I talk about the same things that I talk about here, and it's, you know, and I get accused of not being patriotic or being un-American or, you know, he basically called with, buddy, I'll help you pack your bags if you don't have a love for this country. Yeah. And before it was, before we finished, I kept proposing things to him, and I kept proposing this and this and this, to the point where it ended oddly, quite frankly, on the first day. But then he called back. He said, I got to tell you, I have done nothing but thought, I've done for the past 24 hours, I've thought about that conversation we had yesterday, and it really just resonated with me what you were saying, you know. And because I wasn't disrespectful of him, I never said you're wrong and you're blah blah, you know? I was just like, hey, you know, what about this? And no, really think about this and understand what I'm trying to ask you. I just want you to think about this. Could this be something you'd be willing to consider, right? And that's always my approach. Could this be something you would be willing to consider? And it was something he considered. It was something he considered for at least a 24-hour period, and then called me back the next day. And I thanked him profusely, and I said, thanks for having the courage, right? First to confront me on the stuff that you're concerned about, but thanks for having the courage to even call back today and say you were willing to at least think about that, because that's, and I even affirmed him there. I said, as I said a moment ago, that's an amazing sign of maturity, what you're just exhibiting here. And you must be commended for that, because there's not enough of it. And I said, if everybody who called the station and disagreed with me called me back the next day and we had this kind of exchange, we would be solving the world's problems. We would be. And this is amazing. So, you know, there's something that can really come from this when we're willing to go there and we're willing to have that type of approach. But here's what's going to happen. I promise you, I'm going to predict it now, because it will happen, Father, and you know it will too. As we have these conversations, and as we welcome those who are certainly on the outside of our world as Catholics, and we do affirm them, and we don't immediately berate them and try to change them or accuse them or what you name it, whatever, when we don't take that approach, you and I, will be called every name in the book.
Yes. Yeah, you and I have both been there already, you know. It's probably going to get worse.
We'll be considered whatever derogatory reference of lukewarm or non-Catholic or barely Christian, you name it, whatever. We're going to be accused by everyone that should be on our team. We're going to be accused by them of not doing what we're supposed to be doing, and that's just getting these people to recognize their sin and to convert, to change their ways, to repent, whatever. We're going to be accused of that. I mean, some of the greats were accused of that. Look at the criticism Mother Teresa got. What is she doing? She's just picking these people up. She's not trying to convert them. No, she was letting them die with dignity. That's what she was doing. She didn't need it. That was conversion. Right? So, just be prepared. But I think your skin's thick enough.
Yeah, it's not easy, but, you know, we've been there before, and you have to, I remember I had that experience when, unfortunately, I can't remember his name, but he was a scientist, I think kind of like biology or, you know, he did with evolution and something like that. He was a college professor, and he became famous a few years ago on the internet for desecrating the Eucharist.
And I
had him on my radio show, and I engaged him, and we talked, and I did the exact same thing. I just heard him out, and I proposed things to him, and we had a great conversation. And afterwards, from his friends, I got messages like, they call us theists, you know. He says this is the first time we ever were spoken respectfully by a theist, as in my conversation with him. And then at the same time, I got condemned even by a great supporter of mine. You know, you should never have had him on there. How dare you entertain 1 minute with him? And we could take this even into the, you know, the big global sphere. Okay, I'm not going to presume to be a politician and be that savvy and all that, but you just wonder about this thing with North Korea. You know, is there a way to engage that guy over there? You know, is there a way that can be engaged? You know. We're not even talking about that, you know, right. And I just, you know,
not even an option.
Yeah. It's not even an option, or any of them, you know, from all of our enemies. There's the way we can really engage them. And again, I I'm not a politician, but I don't think I'm being naive about it on a personalistic level, you know, that there
still
is
the human condition.
Yeah, like for instance, let's take the North Korean guy, you know, the leader there. Mm-hmm. You talk about pain. There is lots of pain there. You know, that's part of why he's doing what he's doing. His people are in pain. Is there some way that we could reach out to them and say, you know, we're going to help your people not be in pain anymore, and you're going to be a lot happier for it. They're going to love you even more. You know, right now your forces will love you. You know, they don't think you chop off their head. You know, but they're going to love you. You know, and here's how we can do it. You know, or you know, anything like that. You know, mm-hmm. you know. So we do this on the one-on-one level, as you were doing with the people at the restaurant, the girls at the restaurant.
Yeah,
all the way
sure.
from there to the global level. You know, this is the way I think things work. The only way they can really work. And it's like also, Leo, I think. There's another parallel I see, and I have friends in the movie industry, and I was talking with one of them recently, and one of my big messages to them, and more they're accepting, especially those who are in like the Christian Catholic movie making, you know, they're starting to get it now. I always tell them, look, I'm a man of the arts too, and here's what I'm telling you. I love movies and all that. I said, here's my message to you. Don't put Catholic on the screen. Don't put preaching on the screen. Don't tell the audience what they're supposed to walk away with, you know,
right.
because they smell that right away. I smell it too. And I'm like insulted. You know, you shut right off. Oh, this is a stupid movie. They're trying to, you know, they want me to walk out of here, you know, not believing in abortion. Like, of course. Yeah. I mean, it's obvious what they're trying to do here. What you do is you put a great story up there. And if it's a great story, that person will be led to the right conclusions, and they want to make the right conclusions on their own. They don't want to be told or led like a horse with a bridle in its mouth. You know, here's what you're going to believe when at the end of this movie, you're going to walk out of here. Now we're all going to be nice pro-life people now because you saw this movie. It's you put the great story up there, and you will get more converts. You'll do more evangelization that way than you will if you try to, you know, to force it, you know, to impose the message on them. You propose the story, and the story has the things that are attractive. It has the things that move people. It has the things that make people go home and reflect upon, you know, and that's what makes a great movie. But it also is how that movie can, in a sense, evangelize.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's a very similar thing. You can take this principle, Leo, to every aspect of life, from global politics to the individual person to movies to everything, you know, to certainly me as a pastor. You know, I mean, let's face it. I hear confessions, right? In every individual, you're doing this with every single person. You know, I can't sit there and, you know, you did this, you know, how dare you condemn, you know, don't do this sin anymore or whatever. I have to be able to work with them on that personalistic level. And they know what's, you know, that's why they're in confession. They know what's wrong. They know what a sin is. And I know what it is, you know, and they know what I know, and they know what I'm going to want for them and all that. But you know, it's not what you do in the confessional. You know, you work on that personalistic norm. And in each person, each case is absolutely individual. And you simply try to help them come to these things on their own. You know, we just can't force feed this stuff. You can't impose this stuff. It has to be, because it's a nature of faith too. Faith has to be, you know, sometimes they get a little impatient with God. You know, God, why don't you force faith on people already? You know, why don't you force them to believe in you?
Yeah, sure.
But it wouldn't be faith then. It wouldn't be love, you know? God proposes. No,
it would be, you know, it would be the Kim Jong-un God.
Exactly. Exactly.
Threat.
Even God himself just proposes, and he opens the doors and he tells the story. You know, he's the author of the story, as Chesterton would say. And it's for us to read that story and to want to turn the next page and the next page and the next page and get to the end of the story, you know, which of course would be eternity. And we do so by God proposing, not by him imposing. And
Father, I don't know if you saw this, but just right with what you're talking about there, I saw a beautiful interview with Martin Scorsese.
Oh.
And I did not know that he actually discerned the priesthood. He spent,
yes,
I don't know how many years in seminary discerning and realized that he had this gift and this passion and this love and this drive for film. And but he's always maintained the ethic of just what you're saying, you know. And I never thought about Martin Scorsese as being a big Catholic guy. And this is, you know, what his mission is, to present this truth through art. I never knew that about him, but that's been his intention from the very beginning. Mm-hmm. And it remains with every project that he does.
Mm-hmm.
He has this sincere desire to reveal truth in everything he does. And it's all because of the roots that he had in his Catholic upbringing, and especially his discernment to the priesthood, that he realized it wasn't just something that he thought, well, isn't this cool that I can get passionate about directing movies and producing good film. He realized the pulpit that he could have on that scale was so much grander than what he could have ever have done as a priest, and realizing that this was his true calling, but he didn't abandon the ethic. And I think that, you know, that's what, if we could all learn from that, right, that we could, whatever our walk of life is, whatever we're doing, whatever we're presenting, whatever we're offering, if we can realize that there's a story to be told and a truth to be told, and this is probably, quite honestly, not the time to get into this discussion. We could save it for another time. But I think that ethic that we're talking about is universal, is Catholic, right?
Yes,
because it does fit. It does fit. It fits on the macro. It fits on the micro.
Right.
It fits everywhere, because it's an ethos. And it's
right.
What you've said many times before. It's looking at something through a particular worldview,
right,
which then becomes a universal fit. And,
right,
you know, that's what I want to do. That's what I want to do. That's what this is about for me.
Yes. And, you know, you brought up Scorsese. And boy, I go way back with this kind of thing. I go back to the 80s when I was a young priest, and the Last Temptation of Christ came out. You know, it's a Scorsese movie on...
you got criticized by every Christian.
But it was
critic,
based on,
right,
a great writer, Nicholas Kazantzakis. It was his book, and it was made on the film. And I did like a Siskel and Ebert thing with another priest. You know, we wrote an article in our diocesan newspaper on that movie. And I remember, of course, I got excoriated, you know, because I didn't condemn it, whatever. But what I was what people were missing, it was not a movie about Christ. It was Christ. It was a movie about the faith struggle. But it was then seen through Christ, you know, who, of course, embodied. He took on that faith struggle. You know, he hung on the cross and said, my God, why have you forsaken me? You know, he took on our faith struggle. And so Scorsese, in the movie, in the book, it was about that faith struggle. And doggone it, didn't he do that same thing in his recent movie, Silence?
Yeah, and I haven't seen... Silence. I've heard nothing but amazing stuff, and that's what this particular interview was about. It was more about that movie, but yeah, I would love to see that.
Yeah, because at the end, the priest, and it's a true story. At the end, the priest, well, quote unquote, apostatized, but do they really? I mean, what you
right,
really get into that question? You really get into the struggle that they had, the deep faith struggle, the difficult choices, and. You know, it seemed like they made a choice a certain way, but did they really, you know? And that's what Scorsese, I think, does such a great job about showing, not leading to a conclusion, but showing you the process, the struggle, you know, the faith journey. And that's the value of it. And it's like, you know, he's kind of doing what we're doing here and trying to help people understand the truth, is that we we're entering into that struggle, that process, mm-hmm. that you just can't necessarily bring the ending to them and slam it on them and say, okay, this is where you should be, you know.
And I'm going to leave it with this because I think that's important, and it kind of comes full circle around. And this is kind of what I think Pope Francis dealt with so delicately and beautifully in Amoris Laetitia when he was talking about this pastoral grayness, right?
Yeah.
And he was quoting St. Thomas Aquinas as he was talking about this, and you discover this after you're reading, you're like, oh my God, it's Aquinas he's quoting. But that's where everything happens. Everything happens in that nuance, right?
Right.
Everything happens in, back to that personalistic norm, everything happens in the uniqueness to the situation,
right?
Which is really not unique. We know this. It's a human condition. It's the struggle that's been there since the beginning, and it's the age-old challenge. But it is personified. It is incarnate, if you will, in each of us uniquely. And when we recognize that and affirm that, now we're onto something, right? Now we can get somewhere. So that's what excites me, Father, about having these kind of conversations and about stepping, especially in when we start talking to others who don't agree with us and, you know, who won't be necessarily in the Mutual Admiration Society,
right.
But we can still admire them, and we can still respect them, and we can still affirm them. Yeah, that to me is what it's about.
It is. Absolutely is.
And amen. All right. Well, we'll keep an eye on what you're doing at taberlife.org, and we'll have great conversations. And who knows, maybe we'll reach out to Scorsese. I'd love to talk to him.
Yeah, it would be, yeah.
The sky's the limit.
He owes me. I took bullets for him, you know.
Yeah. That'll be the approach.
Yeah.
You've been a defender since the beginning. Absolutely. Hey, who knows? You could probably dig up some old seminary buddies who are actually priests now. So there's got to be connections.
Yeah.
He's probably just a degree of separation away, Father. Like one or two phone calls, you could probably get right to him.
Yeah, I think so.
Father Thomas Loya, great talking as always, and we'll do this again soon. Thank you so much.
Thank you.